A very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, police hunt for killers of Chief of Sekwa in Bunahafu. Any success so far? We get the latest on this heinous crime perpetrated last Monday night. New affordable housing project to be undertaken by Brazilian construction firm. Is it a final hope for the Ghanaian worker to get somewhere to sleep? And shopkeepers and traders at Circle remain defiant over AMA's attempts to eject them to pave the way for the construction of their interchange. Is the AMA going back to complete the job? Stay tuned for the next hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions by text 0266677570. But first, Rosemary Daisy standing by with a summary of the day's news. Rose.
President Mahama has cut the sword for the construction of 5,000 affordable housing units nationwide at Saglemi in Old Ningo of the Greater Accra region. This is to reduce the country's housing deficit, estimated at 1.7 million. He has also announced that government is negotiating with Brazil for a $1 billion credit facility to be invested in all sectors of the economy, including energy. Vice President Kwesi Mesa-Afa has charged the Ghana Police Service to upgrade skills of personnel to be equipped when dealing with all aspects of crime. He said crime has increased in sophistication and there is the need to upgrade the skills and knowledge of officers. Vice President Mesa-Afa said this at the inauguration of 26 officers inducted into the Police Command and Staff College at Winneba in the Central Region. Activities to commemorate the first anniversary of the death of former Vice President Alhaji Aliu Mahama has been announced in Accra. At a media briefing today, the chairman of the planning committee for the one-year anniversary, Engineer Kwesi Abiesi, explained that the event will be used to highlight the former Vice President's goal of creating a disciplined society. And the president of the World Bank Group, Jim Yong Kim, and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon have vowed to back Niger's call to action and invest $200 million in a new project aimed at improving women's reproductive health and girls' education. They made the pledge during a historic trip to Africa by five international organization leaders from the UN, World Bank Africa Union, Africa Development Bank, and the European Union.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. We are also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Radio BR 93.5 in Sunyai, and Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi. Latest reports from Sekwa in the Bunahafu region say an uneasy calm has returned to the town following an emergency RegSeg meeting this afternoon to cool tensions and unravel the mysterious murder of the paramount chief of the town, Nana Kweku Ankwana. The late chief is said to have been killed on Monday night by unknown assailants. Police in the region have begun a manhunt for the perpetrators. Our Bunahafu regional correspondent John Samatha was at Sekwa and has joined us on the line. Good evening, gentlemen. You are welcome to the program.
Thank you, Agatha.
John, what can you report from Sekwa with regard to the murder of the paramount chief?
Well, it remains a very big mystery. Today at Sekwa, the place looked very quiet, normal. And I understand today is one of the days set aside for funerals. So there were a lot of people in funeral, you know, clothing. And one would have thought that it was because of the death of the chief. But my inquiries brought out the fact that there were a lot of funerals going on in the town that day. That was the main thing that you could see, about three or four funerals. And then at the palace, the registrar of the Sekwa Traditional Council, Mr. Philip Beidou, Joshua Beidou, you know, was emphatic that it's rather interesting. Traditionally, in Akan areas, most Akan areas, when a chief dies, the announcement is not made immediately, but some rituals have to be carried out, a period has to pass before the announcement is made. But in this case, the whole of Ghana has heard about this assassination, and yet the traditional council is insisting that, so far as they are concerned, the chief is sick. And so they are not going to talk to any media as of now. And that they are waiting for some rituals, some processes to be carried out before they come out officially. The police, on the other hand, are, you know, in their investigations, most of them are very tight-lipped. I spoke to the original PRO, ASP, Christopher Kiria, and then I also spoke to the police divisional commander in Brekum, his team. But they all insisted that the only person who I can talk to as of now is the regional commander, who was also logged in a RegSec meeting. So I couldn't get any official, you know, to talk to ask some of the questions that are burning on people's minds. But basically, I just had the opportunity to observe things in Sekwa, and everything looked peaceful, and people were going about their things more normally. Nothing looked untoward. But I spoke to certain people about, I mean, what could have, you know, what about this situation? And most people said that it was a mystery, because it had no Chief Kainsey undertones. There's no problem so far as Chief Kainsey institution in SEPA is concerned. No rivalry, nothing that will cause anybody to, you know, try to shoot their Omahene. So it's still a mystery as to why somebody could shoot him. And some of the things people are talking about is the fact that some illegal loggers, you know, did not like the fact that the chief was very strict when it comes to protecting the, you know, the forest in the area, and he was always at their throat, you know. And so some people are suspicious that probably it could be some illegal loggers, you know, that are behind this, because they point to some incidents in the past when the chief was threatened by some unknown persons, and also his car was set ablaze, you know, some arson, you know, on his car. So it's still a big mystery, you know, because there's no reason why anybody would shoot the Omahene.
If it had nothing to do,
have to wait for the police to conclude their investigation.
All right. If it had nothing to do with Chief Kainsey or any other problem, how was the relationship between the chief and the people?
From what I gather, and from what I know of the Omahene before this incident, he's quite well loved by his people. He's quite a popular chief, and when he talks to his subjects, one of the things they point to is the fact that in recent times he was one of the chiefs that was able to invite the 2-4 Asantehene to his area in Bunahafu, and that shows the kind of respect that he has and all that. His area is noted for farming, like most places in Bunahafu, maize. You know, it's one key crop that they grow here, you know, and so basically, Sekwa is one town you will not hear much about, you know, in the news, you know, because most of the time things are peaceful there, there's no chief safety, you know, problems there. So Sekwa is one town you hardly hear about, unless you have to go there or something. So, the chief was quite a popular chief that, you know, one would expect something like this to happen to.
Well, with regard to death threats that he received some time ago, were these death threats reported to the police, and what did they do about it?
Well, unfortunately, I have not had the opportunity to quiz the police on these issues, but we picked up the information that he actually reported those threats on his life to the police, but we are yet to confirm this, but what we hear is that the police did not take it quite serious, you know, because like I told you earlier, Sekwa is one place where you wouldn't normally associate with such intrigue, but what we are picking up now, which we are yet to confirm, which I'm surely going to do so, definitely tomorrow when I get to talk to the regional commander, we are hearing that he actually reported the threats on his life, some of them through text messages, you know, to the police. But apparently, we had to confirm this, but it was not taken that serious.
What do you also think of reports of reprisal attacks?
Can you repeat the question? The line is very, very bad.
I'm asking what you also think about reports of reprisal attacks. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
We've heard of reports of reprisal attacks from maybe section of the people in the town.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question again?
Like something like revenge. Some people want to revenge the death of their man, the traditional, the paramount chief.
The line is getting so bad. I just can't hear your question. I'm sorry.
Well, we will call you back in a minute.
Okay, okay. I hope the line will be better then.
Yes, and earlier I spoke to the Deputy Bunahafo Regional Police Commander, ACP Patrick Saponena, asking if Serkwa is calm.
It is not like calm has returned to Serkwa. Serkwa has been peaceful all the time. Long before the death of the chief, Serkwa was peaceful. And even during the after. And about this time, when the chief is also dead, there are still peace. So there has never been an occasion where Serkwa has been in a state of disturbance.
But after the death of the chief, has calm returned to the place? That's what we want to know.
It is as calm as it was. There has never been a state of disturbance at Serkwa.
We understand the police have mounted a search for the suspected killers. Has anyone been arrested so far?
So far, not. Yeah, we are still investigating, but so far, no arrest has been.
We also understand that prior to the killing of the chief, he reported of death threats on his life. And did the police receive those reports, and what did the police do about it?
That is what is being circulated. We are investigating also that one to find out why he was threatened, if he was indeed threatened, who threatened him, and what was the kind of the threat. So we are combining everything. So we are doing a holistic investigation of all that we have heard, including the death.
But for now, it seems that people of Serkwa are blaming the police for not doing enough or anything to prevent the killing of the chief.
I don't think so. You were there yesterday and nobody did ever confront us with those allegations. They were cooperative with us yesterday and they are giving us the assurance that they will do all that they can to assist us. Unravel whatever happened.
And how long are your men going to be on the ground?
We pray that things may get well very soon so that we get to know who the perpetrators are so that we bring them to book. Much also depends on the general public. You know, we rely on information and intelligence to build our cases. So as soon as we get intelligence from any member of the public, we make a move on it. And apart from them also trying to, that's any member of the public trying to offer any information, we are also doing the best that we can. So we are combining our own intelligence with any information that we may get from any of the public. So the two together will determine how soon or how fast we can get to the perpetrators.
Well, any assurances for the people that the perpetrators will be brought to book?
That is the essence of policing. Once a crime has been committed, it is the duty of the police to get to the bottom of it and get the perpetrators arrested. So that is the essence of policing. And therefore, we assure the public that we do the best we can to bring them to book.
We want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
You are most welcome.
That was the Acting Bunahafu Regional Police Commander, ACP Patrick Saffone. And John Samatha has just joined us again. John, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Well, I was asking if you know of any reports that says that some people in the town are also planning to avenge the death of their chief?
No, I've not heard anything like that. You know, and that is almost near impossible because most people are, I mean, confused. They're wondering what's going on. So it's very difficult to see a target that you could go and attack, you know. So this will call for serious investigations to unravel.
So, do we still have police presence in the town? And are we talking about several of them or just a few on the streets of Serkwa?
oh no, it's normal. There are some policemen around, but it's because the police station in Sekwa is quite close to the Chief's Palace. It's about 100 meters or less, you know, from the Chief's Palace. So from the Chief's Palace, you can actually see the police station. But there seem to be some policemen from outside Sekwa, because I saw some CID guys I know from Sunyane around. So yes, the police presence has increased, you know, from the normal situation, because I'm sure the investigations are going on, because I saw quite a number of policemen who are not ordinarily resident in Sekwa.
John, we also understand that is the hometown of the General Secretary of the NDC, Johnson is Stephen Kitia. Yeah. Have you per chance sighted him anywhere around to...
No, I didn't see him, but I heard reports that he's actually bereaved. Somebody in his extended family, you know, has a funeral on today, so he was in town attending a funeral. So that's what I heard, but I didn't see him personally.
So generally, Sekwa is really calm.
It's very, very calm, and everybody's just looking for answers. And one interesting thing is that the officials of the traditional council are very angry with some sections of the media, because according to them, like I said earlier on, traditionally a thief's death should not be, you know, announced immediately it happens, you know, but they are angry over a report they claim they saw on Adum TV, which had a picture of the chief and then some footage from some war-torn community with armored cars and things in the picture, and they didn't have any information telling the viewers that it was library footage or something, so people would think that it was Sekwa and the siege situation in Sekwa and stuff like that. So they are very worried about that, and I'm sure that is why they have decided not to talk to the media, even when I insisted that DDC is not like any ordinary station, because we really represent the nation. They still, you know, stood their ground and said that they will not be talking to the media for now, you know. So they are not really happy with the reporter that they got on Adu TV, because they said, you know, they are making it seem like there's some big bubble in Sekwa, when actually it's just a crime that has been committed that must be investigated, you know, whether the perpetrator has brought a book. There's no trouble, crowd trouble or anything that requires big police presence or anything like that. This is just a very big mystery that people are just looking for answers.
But John, if the traditional council is angry with the media, how did the news get out then? Is it not from within?
I can't say much about how the news first broke, you know, but listen to the reports in interviews with some people very close to the chief. I spoke to his driver, actually, and either there was some commotion after the, you know, shooting, because his wife was indoors, so she came out immediately. Her husband was hit, and so she was shouting. So the houses nearby, people came out, and so immediately the reports would go out. You know, we're in the world of technology now, mobile phones everywhere, and so it would be very easy for, you know, the news to, you know, go out that the chief had been shot.
Well, John, many thanks for your time with us tonight. John Samasa is our Bunahafu regional correspondent. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. The average Ghanaian worker's desire is to have his or her own accommodation so that after retirement, he or she can have a decent place to settle with their family. This dream over the years seems to be eluding majority of Ghanaians, with the simple reason that there is no clear-cut policy on accommodation. Attempts by some past governments to promote what they termed affordable housing projects to address this problem have been nothing to write home about. Well, there is yet another attempt by President John Mahama to address the problem, but the question on the lips of many is, are we going to have any hit-free affordable housing projects for Ghanaians? President Mahama cut a sort for the construction of 5,000 affordable housing for low and middle income earners. It forms part of government's policy to to halving the housing deficit in the country. This new deal to be undertaken by OS Construction, a Brazilian company, comes after failed attempt by STS Construction. We will get some perspective on this new project from Deputy Minister for Water, Resources, Works and Housing, Samson Ahim. But before then, let's listen to President Mahama as he cut a sod for work to start.
The current OS housing initiative we started here follows the failed attempt under the STX housing scheme to produce almost 30,000 houses for this country. And so learning from that experience, we decided to adopt a new scheme for delivering housing to our people. And this is the Pania scheme that we are launching here under this OAS company. Over the next 3 years, we expect by 2016 to be able to look back and see a fair and sizable number of housing units completed. There is another project that will take off, which is to be undertaken by Mrs. I-Style Construct. And so we expect that by 2016 we should be able to say with pride that we did contribute to increasing the housing stock in Ghana. The government is determined to deliver on its promises in all the sectors that we have determined. I also wish to announce that we and the Brazilian government are in talks to facilitate a $1 billion master facility agreement to finance various infrastructure projects here in Ghana. These will cover the energy sector, water, transport, agriculture, and so many other things that the government has committed to investing into.
That was President John Mahama. Now to Deputy Minister for Water, Resources, Works and Housing, Samson Ahim, to tell us more about the project. Good evening, Samson. You are welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Can you give us a brief background to the project, which has a Brazilian company to play a key role in it?
Thank you. Good evening to your listeners. As you may be aware of the housing deficits that we have in Ghana, and so the president decided to work around reducing the deficit that we have. And so somewhere last year, the government put facilities in place, and we got this company OAS from Brazil, who was able to source funding from Brazilian Exim Bank, and therefore it came to a cabinet for approval, and it was submitted to Parliament to for approval. The total funding or the total cost of the project is $200 million for 5,000 housing units. And so what we did today, in fact, the company has been in the country for more than 6 months. They have started work already. They are on site. They are working. And what we did today is just to inform Ghanaians about the existence of this project. One may ask, what makes this project different from STS is the fact that now, as we speak, the funding is already in the country and the contractor is on site working. There are physical structures in place that when you move to site, you will see for yourself. And the package, the facilities associated with this is the mortgage facilities that, because according to the president, he thinks that most of the lower middle income earners face the accommodation program in our country. As for the higher income earners and most of the middle income groups are able to procure their own homes, but the challenge is with the lower income groups, and therefore the president says that we should have the mortgage facilities, and so we are working closely with Ghana Home Loans, Stanbic Bank, HFC, and all these banks are brought on board to put mortgage facilities in place so that, irrespective of your financial strength, the financial status, once you have a regular source of income, once you are on payroll, either private or public, and once your employer can testify that you are in you have a regular source of income, and you qualify the criteria, you will be allowed to have one of the facilities. What will happen is that you will be asked to pay about 10% of the total cost, and then the remaining ones spread for between 20 to 25 years for you to pay. This way, we believe that many of our workers, many of our friends in the lower middle income group can benefit from this project.
Again, let me ask, how many housing units are we looking at? Did you say 5,000?
Yes, we are looking at 5,000 housing units.
And will it be spread across the country?
Sure, that is the directive given by the president. And the president says that we should send between 1,500 to 2,000 to the other regions. And that is what we are working together with the consultants to identify. In fact, we are looking at the newly created district where they have accommodation challenges for the officials that have been posted to man such district. And so the issue is that we will not concentrate all the 5,000 housing units in Accra, but about 2,000 will be sent to the region.
And when do we hope to see the projects completed?
We are giving ourselves 4 to 5 years, but we should see the first phase, which is 1,500, after 18 months, we should see it, that they are there, the projects are available to be habited by Ghani.
Well, Ms. Anya, I'll ask you to hold on briefly for me. I'll come back to you. We also have on the line Hackman Owusu Ajiman, who is Minister of Works and Housing under the Kufuor administration. Good evening, Mr. Owusu Ajiman. You are welcome to the program.
Good evening. The line is quite bad, but I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you clearly.
Okay.
Should the average Ghanaian worker start jubilating about the latest affordable housing project?
Can you repeat that question? Because I said the line is quite bad. What do you say?
I'm asking if the average Ghanaian worker should start jubilating about the latest affordable housing project.
Quite obviously. That's the whole philosophy of any government that has come into power in this country. But maybe they have not walked the talk. And so really, I think that goes without saying. But what is important is the affordability and the access, which is a very major issue. That's why we started the affordable housing. But unfortunately, it was not continued by the succeeding government. Technically, when you have this such investment, you don't let them go to waste. And for 5 years, nothing has happened until they are now yet to start another 5,000. But don't forget that we had almost some of the, when I left in 2007, some of the buildings had a first dash of paint. And so therefore, I fail to see the link between letting this thing go for 5 years, nothing happens, then you start another one. But that notwithstanding, let us say that if you have 5,000 houses in 5 years, so you are producing only 1,000 a year, and if you have a deficit of 1.7 million, then you are hardly scratching the surface. The important thing is to make it possible for private investors also to come into the whole situation, and then let's see how we go ahead. But you see, the first instance, we had ordinary Ghanaian contractors building these houses, and out of 5,400 deals, none of these structures have collapsed. And so that means they were able to build well. And they were ordinary Ghanaian, who were guiding them, trying to build capacity. and try to make sure that the entrepreneurial spirit was also supported. And now you go take the money, and then say there's some Brazilians should come and build. But not only that, you're talking about the local content. What local content can really be in building simple flats or simple houses? Why didn't we go to the World Bank or Africa Development Bank or any of these banks, get the resources and finish the affordable houses and then go on? And then encourage Gregor and all the local entrepreneurs to go ahead with it. As it is, we are building no capacity, we're giving it to them, and we, it's our loan. So if it is our loan, why are we giving to the, when we have people who can do, why are we giving the money to the Brazilians to do? They must have gone to look for the money, but we, with a credit rating of B plus until recently, could have easily accessed that loan. Furthermore, the workers' money is what is making SNIT what it is. And so there's every reason to encourage SNIT to invest in affordable housing and not, repeat, to build high edifices of about 20, 30 floors, and then it does not help the worker in any way. And the worker's money being used to generate funds, but how the investment process has to be reviewed. But most importantly, the affordability is a measure of one access and also the level of mortgage that you give them. So if you get a mortgage and it's 25% over 20 years, over 30 years, you would have paid six times the amount of money that you borrowed. So I would have thought that we should re-engineer the whole process and then make sure that if anything at all, the mortgages are subsidized. Mm-hmm. If you go to America, Freddie May and Mark and all of those, they were supporting it. In capitalist UK, the first thing that this government did was to say, let us get affordable housing and make it accessible to the people. So what I'm saying is that if you start, you've left 5,400 flats to rot, and you start with this thing, it's a start, but it's not terribly impressive. And that is not the way to tackle the issue of affordable housing people. Let me say that the government should see itself where the amount of money that is expended in the society in governance, a lot of it should go into help housing the people. Otherwise, they will not be able to ever accept these ones. And the idea that they said, well, it was distributed to by the government, of course they were distributed to Ghanaians, and if there was any malfeasance or if there was something not done properly, it needs to be corrected, needs to be done properly.
Right.
And let us do that and manage the whole thing properly rather than let it go because it was started by another government. So anything that, at least in my time, that I found good of the previous administration, I carried on. And so, therefore, I believe that we have started the work. I would not make any song and dance about this whole thing.
All right.
And, go ahead and see what we can do. But most importantly, I believe that we have been shortchanged. We tried STX, and now these people, we have been shortchanged. At the end of the day, it's our own money. So if it's our own money, why don't you give it to our people? Those people who put up their houses and the flats, why don't you give it to them and let them, encourage them to finish, supervise them well, and give them the know-how,
yeah,
as well as the capability and the capacity which they should ought to develop. In this country, most of the contracts, the contracts are all foreign-owned.
All right.
There's not a single Ghanaian contractor, so we have to build that capacity. Mm. And capability. That's what we're doing. There's not a single Ghanaian contractor. What is the parliament?
So,
about 300,000.
Mm. Mr. Osadima, hold the line again. I'll come back. You raised some points. Let me start.
We should go for a loan and then give it to a foreign company. I just don't want to go into this political debate. Otherwise, I will ask that we went for a loan from India, and Indian company did the first half for us. The gas lodge and several others. We done. And so I don't see where he's coming from. This is a group of people who had their own facilities. We are talking about 1.7 million housing deficits.
Let Mr. Ahe respond to it. Mr. Ahe, you heard the former minister. He says, get the resources and complete the affordable housing project started by the Kufo government. Do you agree?
Yeah, before I respond to that, Mr. Honorable Azman doesn't see why we should go for a loan and then give it to a foreign company. I just don't want to go into this political debate. Otherwise, I will ask that we went for a loan from India, and Indian company did the first half out for us. The gas lodge and several others, we done. And so I don't see where he's coming from. This is a group of people who had their own facilities. We are talking about 1.7 million housing deficits. And if somebody is doing 5,000, it doesn't prevent anybody from also putting package together so that they all of us working together to reduce the deficit. And so I don't understand where you're coming from. But on the issue of the completion of the affordable housing, which was initiated by the former president Kufuor,
yes,
I've said earlier that this year in February, when the president came to parliament on the State of the Nation address, his excellency the president John Mahama assured Ghanaians that his government was going to work around the clock to complete all the affordable housing which was initiated by former President Kufuor. We have done some work and we found out that they spent 18 million Ghana cedis to bring the affordable housing at the various stages that we found it as we speak. Now, what we have done is that we require 241 million Ghana cedis to be able to complete all the affordable housing spread in Pong, Botema, Kumasi, Koforidua, Wa, and then Tamale. And so as we speak, we have handed over all the facilities at Pong to TDC, Tema Development Corporation. Mr. Uzadama, if you can go there tomorrow, you will find for yourself that the workers are there. They are working seriously to complete the facilities that we have at Pong. And when it comes to Botema, we have given 5 blocks to State Housing Company. They have completed. We have given additional 5 blocks to the military. They have also done about 95%. The remaining projects, part in Potema, Koforidua, Kumasi, Tamale, and Wa, we have given it to SNEC. In fact, they borrowed from SNEC, and therefore it's just prudent that we ask SNEC to come on board to work and then complete. So it's not as if we have abandoned the affordable housing which was initiated under President Kufuor's regime. In fact, Mr. Uzadma is asking, Honorable Uzadma is asking for the cost. He was in Parliament when this facility was approved. So he should rather tell the news how we approve this facility. Because he was in Parliament.
Well,
he was a member of Parliament at that time. He was there when the decision was taken, and so document was given to him. The contract was given to him, so he understands it better. He should rather tell the news how much it's going to cost. And as a former minister in the sector, I'm sure he shouldn't be asking when we are now going to start the entire project, when we are putting together a distance, and he's talking about 8K1. The project cannot cost a 2-bedroom in Ghana under this facility cannot cost more than even $25,000. That's what we are looking at. And so please, you allow us to put the proper mechanisms in place to ensure our focus, the president's focus, the minister's focus, is that we should work, as CDO said, to reduce the deficit by making sure that most of our low-income earners benefit from this.
Then comes my question, Ms. Ahe. How affordable is the housing project to the average worker in Ghana?
Thank you very much. You know, what is affordable is relative. If you are asked to pay even 3 bedrooms for 100,000, 100,000 or 10,000 Ghana cedis, it may not be affordable to you. But when you are asked to pay 3 bedrooms for 10,000 Ghana cedis, but you are asked to do that in 20 years or 25 years,
it may be affordable to you, because in that way, it will not put pressure on your monthly income. And this is what Ghanaians need at the moment, so that everybody can own it. So if your salary is 500 and you are using, say, under Ghana cedis to pay for your shelter every month, you will not see the pressure as against asking you to pay the entire 10,000. And so what is affordable? It's relative. And that is why we are working around the clock to ensure that it's really, we give meaning to the real word affordable, or what is affordability.
So how much would this project cost for the building?
The entire project is some $200 million for 5,000 housing units. That is the cost of the entire project.
And I mean an average 3-bedroom house for the ordinary Ghanaian.
That is why I said earlier that we are still putting together what would actually cost. But when it came to Parliament, the approval, it didn't exceed $25,000. That's talking about around $50,000 for 2 bedrooms.
All right.
That's what we're looking at.
All right.
And so I think that we should not do politics with some of these things. Let's we have a challenge in the housing sector, and the government is first on addressing it.
Well, Mr. Hay, briefly, how sure are you that party supporters, political appointees, and family members of those in government are not given preferential treatment when the project is completed?
Yeah, your question is very legitimate because of the antecedent, because of the precedent that we have in this country. But what I can assure Ghanaians, listen to us this evening, is that who will be fair, who will be so a lawyer, who will be very, very careful, who will know that we are not working for NDC people, we are working for all Ghanaians, and the scheme that we are going to put together, the government is not even going to manage who gets what, because if somebody comes in and you go and pay your deposit in Sambik and you qualify, I don't think Sambik will tell you that you are MPP or you are CPP, and for that matter, you cannot benefit as it happened before. So the assurance I'm giving to Ghanaians is that we know that we are serving Ghanaians, and therefore, whatever is due to all Ghanaians, everybody who qualifies will benefit from it.
All right. Ms. Ahin, we want to thank you for your time with us. Samson Ahin is Deputy Minister for Water Resources and Works and Housing. And back to you, Mr. Owusu Ajiman.
Yes.
How can the government ensure that party supporters, political appointees, and family members of those in government are not given preferential treatment when the project is completed?
Well, that is the boil down to the issue of management, as I was referring to. But let me first address the issue that I think Mr. Ahi got it all wrong, Honorable Ahi got it all wrong. The fact that I was in Parliament, so what? After all, he's the one who's handling the project right now. And what I'm saying is that he's talking about affordability being relative. It's not a point at all. The issue is, what is the interest rate that one is going to pay for a mortgage, for a flat, that can be said to be affordable or accessible to the average Ghanaian? And so, therefore, I believe that it's important to address those issues. Let's question the issue. Let's look at it. Let's interrogate it. Let's make sure we have the facts and we have the figures. Because, you see, many a time, these projects start, and then the cost builds up and builds up and builds up. You can say the same for the Flagstaff House. The cost built up and built up and built up, so that by the time you finish, I tell you that some of the documentation that was brought by this government to Parliament quoted 2-bedroom flats, and he cannot deny it, because it's the same ministry where Mr. Ahi is now, and I was not minister. They brought it for $50,000 per 2-bedroom flat. I can say on authority, because he can produce the documentation. Let us interrogate the issue. The point that I'm making, that make the mortgages affordable and make sure that these are then assessed by ordinary Ghanaian. As far as the distribution is concerned, we can only talk about fairness, and fairness is being done. And I believe that when, for example, we had the contractors working on the affordable houses, believe you me, there were people who were very known NDC people. They also had some. Everybody had some. So, really, I don't think that becomes a major issue. They are all Ghanaians in the end. And if you reduce 100,000 NDC people with their houses and then only 50 from NPP or CPP, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You have housed 100,000 Ghanaians. And that's what we have to work out. But what I'm saying that the issue is so pressing, it's so urgent that there's need to really make sure that we tackle it energetically.
All right.
Just as we are, some of the issues are coming on, we have to tackle it energetically and then make sure that we put in place measures and proposals that will make it these things accessible and
all
affordable
right. Right.
to the average Ghanaian. That's what we are talking about. And then above all, make sure that when we have such facilities, we give them to Ghanaian entrepreneurs, because this is not rocket science. It's not exactly rocket science.
Right.
So give it to them. They could have done it. We could have gotten the loan from everyone, because it is our loan. It's not as if the Brazilians are bringing the money to build and then offload it for us. It is our loan.
Mr. Usadim, I want to... We want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Hackman Owusu Adjiman was a Minister of Works and House under the Kufuor administration. And let's talk to policy think tank Imani Ghana, and we are privileged to be joined on the line by its Vice President Kofi Bento. Good evening, Sir Bento, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good evening.
Mr. Bento, how optimistic are you with this project? Because your outfit led a crusade in the past, warning government of the SDS and similar deals which did not come to fruition.
Well, in the first place, we do not have any basis to be either optimistic or pessimistic. The only measure we can use is to check whether the proper things that we believe have to be done have been done in this particular case. And to that extent, we don't think so. And what I mean is that if you look at the STX project which went bad, the main reasons why it went bad were because, one, there was reckless haste. Unnecessary haste to try and bring this project into fruition. And then the contracts were shrouded in all kinds of secrecy. We didn't know the details. And when they came out, they clearly were not well thought through. The lack of transparency for the contract is what led to the problems in Parliament. And this thing was passed, you know, under very questionable circumstances. And then you had a situation where no money was coming, even though the government had given all kinds of guarantees. Now, the power can be seen in this case as well. There is reckless haste in this particular case, because you have $200 million loan, and frankly speaking, a month ago, we did not know about this. So all of a sudden, this thing is sprung upon us, and we have to accept it. Now, it is possible in this country to raise $200 million if we want to prioritize housing, because oil alone gives us about $500 million a year. And then the transparency is not there. We don't know the terms of this contract. We know that all kinds of guarantees have been given to them, and they are coming to build. Then again, $40,000 per house is not something that Ghanaian contractors cannot do. So we really do not understand again why we should go and take a loan from Basel and let them come and build fast. There are certain things that by all means need time to be well done. One of those things is housing. There's no way you can hasten and get it right. So we are a bit worried, and in the next few days, we are going to look closer at the project and other things. But if I were to say anything right now, I'll say there are too many similarities between this one and the STS deal, and I am doubting if it will work, even though I wish it will work ultimately.
But Mr. Bento, why do you think we always rely on outside support for these housing projects? Do we have the capacity inland or at home?
We have all the capacity we need to build houses in Ghana. The question, why do we rely on outsiders to do this? The answer to that question is that there is not a single reason why. The only reason they tell us is that the people are bringing money. Now, what does it mean to say bringing money? In the case of STF, we're going to pay about 100% double what we are taking. In this case, someone should tell us how much we are paying. And if $200 million is what we are asking for, we've spent $500 million on Jeddah already. If $200 million is what we are asking for, we make $500 million from oil alone in this country. So we can easily do it. Now look at the time it is coming up. Almost at the end of the year. And this was not in the budget for 2013. So why are we hasting? And 2014 is just near the corner. Why don't we put it in that budget and plan it well and execute? So if you ask me, I do not find any reason why we are going to foreigners to come and build for us houses that we can build. There is nothing about housing which is being Ghanaian competence.
So, as a people, what can or should we do to tackle the housing deficit so that we move away from all these botched affordable housing projects as seen in the past?
Madam, the problems are not being caused by the people. The problems are being caused by your government. It is government that signs these deals. It's government that does these things. And trust me, $40,000 houses are not affordable for the average Ghanaian. If they are talking about mortgages, there are people building houses which are $20,000 today in Ghana. So why don't you support them? So if you say as a people, what we can do as a people is to select our leaders properly. Otherwise, we can't do anything. You can't go and stop the president from doing what he's doing because he has won an election. So it is not the people, it is the leadership. And to the extent that we don't complain and we don't tell them to their faces that these are not the right ways to go, I think it's going to continue. We just have to keep speaking up.
Mr. Bento, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Kofi Bento is Vice President of Imani Ghana. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Our last story, that popular Tiptoe Lane at Kwame Nkrumah Circle was a scene of busy exchanges between traders and shopkeepers on one hand and an AMA demolition task force with police support on the other. The task force was there to carry out the eviction of shopkeepers in the lane to allow for the construction of the interchange to facilitate easy flow of traffic. But after all the showdown yesterday, we have reports that eviction and subsequent demolition has stalled, albeit temporarily. What is the reason? Let us put this question to the head of public affairs of the AMA, Numo Blahu. Numo, have you halted your eviction exercise at the Tiptoe Lane at Circle because of the clashes that occurred there?
No.
But we understand the shop owners and traders are back in the lane doing business in full swing. Are you aware of this?
Yes, you see, we have this kind of indisciplined canker that is creeping into our public fiber. But then, when we have national issues, I think we should all be up and doing to condemn what is not good. Because the Kwame Nkrumah Circle that we all know is now going to be an interchange. We need to create access for incoming and outgoing. I mean, we have to make diversions and all that. So we cannot keep on to keep certain illegalities that have been, I mean, allowed to stay for a long time. And it is time we stand up to what is not right. What happened yesterday, in short, isn't something that should have happened. But we had people who, because of, I would say, political points or whatever, turned the whole issue into another problem. But then, whatever it is, the issue has not solved. But then, I think whatever happens, there should be a re-strategizing to make sure that the aim is achieved so that at least we can have free food.
Going, gone. Will it happen or government will intervene? Well, the reality is that an auction house in Accra is determined to auction the bungalow which houses the AMA chief executive Alfred Oko Van Der Poel, as well as the assets of the AMA on Thursday to defray the cost incurred as a result of an abrogated contract the AMA had with EWCL, a waste management company. An Accra Fast Track High Court ordered the sale, which is to be carried out by Vance Mart Company. However, earlier In an interview with the AMA Chief Executive Alfred Vanderpoel, said the AMA is in serious contact with the Attorney General's Department to halt the sale. Let's listen to the AMA Chief Executive.
The fact of the matter is that, you know, AMA had a contract with CCWL on waste management. However, the contract was abrogated under the previous administration. And so CCWL took the matter to court and they were giving judgment. And so the judgment calls for some sums of money that has to be paid by the assembly. The assembly has not been able to meet that obligation and they are exercising their option to want to auction our properties. But we won't sit down to allow that to happen. We will see and we are working on arrangements to settle this.
You need the space to do what you have to do and people are asking for relocation. I think we should think twice. Because other than that, one day some people will occupy the Independence Square and then when they are to be removed, they will ask for relocation.
Numo, we want to thank you for your time with us today.
You're welcome.
Numo Blafo is head of public affairs for the AMA. Let's read some of your messages. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Frank Owusuan star controlled the sounds and my producers were Edmund Tete, Christopher Sedu Bantagama, Felix Kofi, and Celestine Abdi. Rosemary Gaze read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.